Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Welcome to the NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon, the Post Dispatch, joined by our beat reporter Matthew DeFranks, and let's jump right to it. Hey, Four Nations face-off. It's not an all-star game, my friend. What'd you think? I had a flashback to the Chuck Norris division days, and man, three fights in 9 seconds, all instigated by kids that grew up in St. Louis. What'd you think?
Yeah, it was quite an opening. And honestly, you know, I'm sitting at home watching it, and it's pretty exciting. You know, you have all this hype for this game. First time in 9 years, or best on best, US Canada. And even 9 years ago at the World Cup, like, that wasn't even best on best. You had the Team North America in there that had a lot of the young superstars on that under 23 team. So this is the first time since maybe the Sochi Olympics that truly Canada and America had, you know, their best rosters available to them. And so I think that kind of already impacted the hype that I had going into the game. And then, you know, the Matthew Tkachuk fight starts off, and like, oh man, this is going to get pretty rowdy. And then Brady follows it up. And then, JT Miller, he drops his glove and just waits for someone else to join him. And Colton Parayko ended up being the dance partner. So yeah, I mean, definitely a start to the game that will be remembered for a long, long time. And I think it helped the fact that the game kind of followed up with that, you know, like the hits that some guys were laying, McAvoy hitting McDavid twice in that first period after he got danced. And then, you know, Brady Tkachuk later on in the forecheck, putting Drew Doughty sideways into the boards. Those are big boy hits, and it's helpful that the game followed up the fights and with the proper physicality within the sport, right? Like, that's part of the game as well. And I think it was a fun game to watch, and I think it just sets it up for Thursday as well.
You know, I think fans obviously just were thrilled, and the players enjoyed the chance to have that stage. Now, if you're a general manager and you're seeing your star players getting rocked out there, and McAvoy later gets rocked, and this could be quite costly to the Bruins, guys are getting banged up left and right. They're blocking shots. Superstars are playing on the, you know, third and fourth line. In some cases, not superstars, but stars are blocking shots. The guys are driving each other into the boards. You had a bunch of fights. And you're a general manager, or you're president of hockey operations, you're probably not as having as much fun watching these teams go at it as fans were.
Yeah, I think if you had a player on Team USA and you're watching the Sweden game on Monday, you probably got to be holding your breath, right? You see Matthew Tkachuk's not playing, Matthews isn't playing, McAvoy's not playing, Trocheck leaves, Brady Tkachuk leaves. Like, and looking back at it now, you know, seeing the statement that the Bruins released this morning about Charlie McAvoy, and when he first injured his shoulder, that led to his hospitalization in Boston, it was in the Finland game. And so he hurts his shoulder in the Finland game, fights through it enough to play against Canada, play physically against Canada. And that's sort of an indication of what the games have meant, right? Where this guy, he gets hurt in the first game of the tournament, plays another game with this injury, and now suddenly, you know, he's in the hospital for an infection for his right shoulder injury. So that's kind of indicative of how much it means to the players. And yeah, you're right. If you're a GM and you're sitting there watching, it's got to be a tough watch, I'm sure. When you have, already so many guys that have gotten injured that aren't playing in the tournament, whether it's Haston or whether McCarr got sick or whether, you know, Quinn Hughes may or may not be joining Team USA for the final. Like, there's a lot of guys that have been in or out or hurt. And, you know, even if you're Vegas right now, you look at Shea Theodore, and you're like, well, that was one of our top defensemen, and our other top defenseman decided not to play in this tournament because he's also hurt. So, it's tough because these are intense games, and I guess the injuries have kind of shown it too.
I think the cool thing about all this is that hockey has not lost the national pride element. You know, wearing the sweater for your country, be it in the World Juniors or in a best-on-best event like this, really means something. And we're going to see more best-on-best with the Olympics and an additional tournament coming up, which is really good. It just speaks to the culture of the sport. And in particular now, with the United States developing so many good players and becoming an equal of Canada, man, it's really on, and it's really special.
Yeah, and you know, I'm curious to see what happens in the future because of you know, the USA's performances recently at the World Juniors, and you know, outside of that fact, you have a lot of the recent number one picks or future number one picks that are Canadians still. You know, Bedard, Celebrini. If you want to look at, you know, Schaefer, DuPont, like those, McKenna, like these are types of guys in Canada that are, you know, 1-1 picks. And I guess part of the reason why the U.S. has been winning World Juniors is that those guys have been in the NHL and not playing in the World Junior tournament. So the fact that you could see some talent distribution there is interesting. And I think the other thing that I look at and see why these guys care so much is because it has been so long, right? Like, do the guys care as much if they're playing international hockey every 2 years, whether it's, you know, next year, the Olympics, 2 years after that, World Cup, 2 years after that, Olympics, and then World Cup, Olympics, whatever, every 2 years? Do the guys care as much at that point? Does it become like right now, these guys, a lot of them have never represented their country in this way. They're kind of the lost generation of guys that would have played in the Olympics the last two times that the NHL did not go. And, you know, they didn't have a World Cup in that time. They didn't have on the Olympics. They didn't have, you know, anything, Four Nations even during that time. So does that lose some of its value in the future when these guys are so used to it, doing it every 2 years? Maybe, but for right now, I'm just going to sit back and enjoy this one.
Yeah, I think what is cool is that the guys who do come up through the World Juniors, it is such a big deal, and so they're trained that this is such a big deal. Now, obviously, the World Championships are not, because while other countries have their best players or many of their best players, obviously just the non-qualifiers for the playoffs play for U.S. and Canada. But these guys, the World Juniors are spirited. And so they graduate, you know, they're prepared for this, you know, like the U.S. having the developmental program, really building that, wearing the country's colors to match what Canada's done. So I think there's a chance that this will go for some time, which is really great. Now we'll see down the road after, you say, two more big international tournaments the next several years, whether it carries on. But man, a lot of pent-up energy. I mean, this game, this will be maybe the most anticipated hockey game in a long, long time.
Yeah, I think for sure. More so than I think probably some of the cup final games, just because sometimes at that point in the playoffs, you know, you don't have that big rooting interest anymore across the entire country. Just think about last year. You have Edmonton in Canada, and even not all Canadians are probably rooting for Edmonton. You had Florida in the United States, and I don't think even all of Florida was rooting for the Panthers, right? And outside of that, you're interested in good hockey, and when a team comes back from 3-0 to force a game seven, you're interested. But it doesn't have that broad appeal that U.S. Canada would have across both countries. And so, and you take that, I think you take the political backdrop, the anthem stuff, and you have a lot of different mixtures of interest and of people wanting to represent their country.
Yeah, it's always we know we're in a little bit of a tense time when you have to have a please respect the other country's anthem announcement before they play the anthem. Also, I cannot figure out the Swedish anthem. I can't figure out where the tune is in that, but that's another story.
But you got the Finnish one figured out though, right?
In looking at this situation, going to our favorite goaltender Jordan Binnington here in the STL, man. I'm watching, you're watching the game, and Jake Guentzel kind of fans on a shot, right off the bat, in the first go around. You think, oh, and his Binner's head snaps back, like I gotta have that. And then just the closing sequence against the Finns there. I mean, that was swimming in the goal, losing his stick, getting beat between the pads while the stick's off to the side. Yeah, 6-on-5. The game was in hand, but Canada's kind of nervous about our guy, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, and I was talking about this the other day with someone. He's been fine. He hasn't been great. He hasn't been absolutely horrid. It's just he's been fine. I mean, his save percentage is under 900, which is where he's at for the season. And I think you have to remember also that these are the best players in the world. They're going to, score more goals on average than your typical NHL player. So, yeah, I mean, I think the issue with Jordan Binnington and his perception in Canada is that a lot of the goals that he's given up have not looked great. Even going back to that Sweden game, you have Brodin, Prayer going in, you have Kempe, clean shot that maybe you'd want to save on. The Guentzel goal was not good. You talked about that finish against the finish for him, and even the Larkin one. He's probably third on my list of things that happen on that play, whether it's the Crosby turnover, the bad line change, and then you have a shot coming down the wing that you'd probably still want a save on. But the goals he's given up haven't looked great, and so that's outweighed whatever he's done that's been positive. I mean, that overtime against Sweden, he was really good. I mean, there were some of the power plays against the United States where he was really good. But the fact that that's your first impression is giving up some of the bad goals. That's not really building him much goodwill. And if you look about it, if you look at it in Canada, anyways, he probably didn't start with a lot of goodwill, just based on reputation from around the league during his time in St. Louis, and the fact that, quite honestly, a lot of fans probably don't even like him. And so you start from that spot, you give up a few soft goals, and whatever good that you do happen to do is kind of unraveled because of the bad goals give up. So, yeah, I mean, has he been? I don't think he's been the difference, and he wasn't going to be the difference in the United States loss. Like they scored one goal. It wasn't like I don't think Hellebuck had to be tested all that much, right? There were some advanced numbers that point to Canada having a good territorial and possession game on that game, but just watching it didn't feel like they deserved to win it, right? Didn't feel like they got robbed because of their goaltending. And yeah, I mean, he's the only goalie that has, I mean, Canada's the only goalie that's, they're the only team that's used one goalie, right? The United States had Hellebuck for two, Ottinger for one. Sweden's used all three of theirs. Finland kind of bounced back and forth between Saros and Lehkonen. So, for all the talk about Canadian goaltending, they've been the one consistent one. And I guess we'll find out in the next day or so whether they go back to him for the final.
Yeah, I'll talk about just the magnitude of this. Cooper's been very supportive. Would I be shocked if he tried something different? No. He's played it straight so far. But just talk about the magnitude for the goalie in this game, whether it's Binnington or whether they go to Aiden Hill. It's so outsized. It's one, a single game. Biggest stage internationally in some time in a sport where weird things happen. Pucks go off skates, pucks are deflected by their D-men, by their own goalie. So many things happen. Not to mention it's the best players in the world on both sides, capable of doing ridiculous things with the puck. All of that, and you're the goalie. And especially if you're the goalie in Canada. It's just incredible how much good it can do for a player and his image and his legacy. And the flip side is also quite large.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of things just with Canada, Canada-only issues, I guess. Like, this hasn't been a position they've had to worry about, right? Like, when you go from, you know, Watt to Brodeur to Luongo to Price, like, those are some big names. Those are Hall of Famers. Those are some of the best of all time that you didn't have to worry about these sorts of questions. You know, you don't have to think, hey, like, does Canada have the goaltending? Yes, they have Carey Price, they have Roberto Luongo, they have Martin Brodeur, they have Patrick Waugh. Like, they had the guys, they had the best players at their position during that time. So it's an unfamiliar position for Canadians to look at their roster and say, is our goaltending good enough? And this so far, it hasn't, you know, stolen them any games. And really, with that roster in front of him, they shouldn't have to steal any games. Like, that's just not how it should be working out for them. And I think that's the other part. Like, you look at their roster and it's McKinnon and McDavid and, you know, Crosby, and you have Makar on the back end, and you look at some of the best players at their position at forward and at defense. And I'm sure as a Canadian, they'd want to keep that standard throughout their entire roster. And that's just not the case with who they have in goal. So, like, that's where it gets a lot more attention in Canada because of the history, because of the rest of the roster. And yeah, as you mentioned, the stakes now, like, he's bounced back from a lot of tough games in his career. But if he loses on Thursday, you know, Bennington, I wonder how much that sticks with him, how long that sticks with him. And in a weird way, like, how it affects the Blue season now, right? Just mapping out some of the goaltending questions. You know, they have a Saturday, Sunday back-to-back coming back this weekend. Jets and Avalanche, and I would imagine because of the back-to-back, they're going to split it anyways. And if Jordan Bennington plays on Thursday, that'll be, you know, his fourth game during the break. It makes sense to do it with Hofer on that Saturday and then Bennington on the Sunday. The one thing it might avoid is a USA-Canada rematch on Saturday if Hellebuck starts for the Jets. You know, they could I don't know if they're all going to fly together, whether Kyle Connor, Morrissey, Hellebuck, Parayko, and Bennington are all going to fly from Boston to St. Louis together and then play against each other on Saturday again. But yeah, it's a big stage, and, you know, Bennington's best game or biggest triumph was in that building on the biggest of stages. And knowing him, I think he'd probably want to draw a little bit on that, but while also trying to stay in the moment, which is what he tries to do a lot.
Yeah, he has made such tremendous strides in his mental approach to the game, to the point where he is a steadying force on the Blues, and for now the right guy to have as they try to retool because of his mental makeup that he has built, in the wake of winning the cup and going through all the things that happen after you win a cup. Dealing with all the things that have happened in a guy's career, he's come to a really good place, and he's going to need every bit of that. He's going to be severely tested. The building of the mental strength is going to see if it holds. And in a way, I'm pulling for a guy, you know, just as even as an unbiased sports writer, just because you've seen his journey and you've seen, you know, him go through this in real time, and then you reflect on it over the last few years. And now it all comes to this. It's almost an unfair spot to be put in, but then again, he would, being the competitor that he is, this is one thing, something that he's always cherished. So he wants it, and they're just going to sit back and look at the rest of the world and see what happens if he gets the call.
Yeah, and I think, like, that's the one thing about him too, is that you know that he wants that net, and, you know, all athletes do want that opportunity, but he's someone who is pretty open about wanting that and wanting to embrace it. And I think it was, to me, it was somewhat clear when the teams were announced in December that Bennington would be the starting goalie. And, you know, the rest of the season hasn't really gone probably the way that he would have wanted, or to be as consistent as he would have wanted. But when you see his goalie coach from St. Louis joining Team Canada, you're like, okay, yeah, that could make sense. You have the goalie coach from St. Louis, and you have a starter from St. Louis. But I think if he was not going to start that first game, I think it probably would have been pretty disappointing for him. And likewise on Thursday, you know, if he doesn't get that start, I think he'll be very disappointed if he doesn't even get that opportunity to show himself.
All right, last topic on the Four Nations. We got to see what a Colton Parayko fight looks like. As you mentioned earlier, JT Miller was looking for a partner. Colton's a big dude. But to his credit, he just didn't use his strength to just, you know, wrestle. He came out and he threw. So I thought he handled himself all right. I mean, again, I'm an old school guy and I get into that sort of thing more than I probably should. But I thought he represented St. Louis and the late, great Bob Plager quite well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you say it's old school, but I think if you're a hockey fan, I think everyone still loves to see a fight. You know? Like, it's a lot of times you don't expect that it's coming, or even in the ones that you do expect that are coming, you're maybe even more looking forward to it just because there's a backstory behind it, right? Like, when you see Jake Neighbors line up for a face-off against Sam Bennett, you're like, oh, there's a story behind this. Like, this is about to happen right now. So, you know, Parayko, I was thinking about it the other day. I could only recall two of his fights. I forgot that his first fight was actually against Gabriel Landeskog, April 2016, according to Hockey Fights. And then I remember he had a fight against Brett Ritchie in Dallas that I was covering the Stars at that moment. And it was on a Stars power play, I think. Parayko tried to lay out John Klingberg, the hit at the blue line, and then Brett Ritchie stepped in to fight Parayko. And actually yesterday after Blues practice, I was like, hey, Monty, do you remember when Parayko fought Brett Ritchie when you were the Stars coach in your first year in Dallas? And he's like, No, I don't remember that. And so, but those are two big boys. And then he had a fight with Clem Costin at the end of the season last year in San Jose. So it does happen. And it's just funny that, you know, I just love the image of Miller standing there, just dropped his gloves, just didn't have a partner. Just, he didn't have anyone. He just dropped his glove and just waited and just waited for someone to join him. And Parayko sees his gloves off. And I'm sure in that moment, you know, you've just watched the two fights previous. You see a scrum at the net. You see gloves off. You're right in the Montreal high of it all. And I could see how, you know, even a mild-mannered guy like Colton Parayko can get into it at that point. And, you know, Miller's got a lot more fights than Parayko does. But Parayko's got the one thing that you can't teach. Some size, right?
Yeah.
And I think he handled himself pretty well there.
Pretty good reach on it. And sense of responsibility took over. The adrenaline and responsibility. You can't back off. You don't want Binnington to have to take care of it. So, he steps up. And certainly, I think, and now you're 9 seconds in through these fights. I love the over on the other side, the Kachucks, how jacked up they were. Matthew to welcome Brady to the party. And then that whole thing, watching Brady's fight, you know, we saw how tough Bennett was firsthand, and he's a load. But Brady, oh my, you know, he, in the old days, he would, you know, man, because he is just a beast. Matthew's more of a chirper. Brady's a monster. So
I think I always forget how big Brady is. It didn't hit me until one of the times where he's doing a media availability, and you stand next to him and you look up and, oh my goodness, this guy is monstrous. This guy is huge. I don't know. Did you see the mic'd up segments that were posted on Twitter?
I did not.
I think Brady was mic'd up and for the game. And so as he's going to the box, you know, him and Matthew are talking and they're asking each other how their fights looked. You know, Brady comes to the boss and said, "Hey, I got him." And then Matthew goes, "Hey, how did mine look?" And he goes, "Yeah, it looked great." And then there's later clips where, you know, Brady's talking to, I can't remember if it's a referee or a linesman, but he was like, "Yeah, how about that? That was fun." And the ref was like, "Yeah, that was great. It was awesome to see." And so that's just hockey right there, right? It's like going to the ref saying, "Hey, how great was that fight?"
All right. So want to touch a few Blues topics before we let you go, get you to practice. Those Blues who are not at the Four Nations are trying to get their legs back and their compete level up. Jim Montgomery getting them to back into battle mode with these back-to-back games against very good opponents coming up out of the break. They got to get the sand out of their shoes, their skates, and, you know, the salt water out of their eyes here. It's time to get back to work. But I thought one thing that was interesting, I think, and it's, to me, it'll sum up the rest of the season, when Montgomery told you that he just wants to not as much look at the results, but look at how the team is doing, how it's proceeding, the consistency in all the, you know, effort, details, you know, trying to play a certain way, trying to get the team at a level of showing up, this is how we play, this is our effort. To me, that kind of sums up the rest of the season, because as you outline again and again, the actual getting into the playoffs would really require a team folding or two ahead of them. So really, it's just about what can you use the last part of the season for as you try to build to the future.
Yeah, and I look at this season as kind of an opposite of last season in a way. And now I know the result may be the same, where you end up on the outside of the playoffs again. But last year, it felt like after the coaching change, the results were there, but the process still wasn't there. I mean, underlying figures, number-wise, the Blues were probably a bottom 3-5 team. Like in some of the possession figures at 5-on-5, they were only better than San Jose and Chicago. And we saw where those teams drafted last year with 1 and 2. And you looked at the goaltending that they received when Drew Bannister took over, the power play that got cooking under Drew Bannister. And, you know, he still deserves some credit for that. I think if you're going to dog coaches for a power play that stinks, then you got to give him credit for a power play that works. And I just didn't feel that the 5-on-5 game was at a point last year where you felt good about it going into the next season. And right now, the 5-on-5 play is honestly so much improved under Jim Montgomery than it was under Drew Bannister, and the results may not be there. You know, the penalty kill has been awful. The goaltending has been inconsistent. So, you know, there are reasons why the process hasn't resulted in the results, but you have a better feeling long-term about it because the underlying process is kind of there under Montgomery. And so that can continue in the final 26 games of the season, where you look at it and you say, well, we can see it coming. And, you know, honestly, still whether that even matters to Doug Armstrong and how he views the roster going into his final summer as the Blues general manager, we'll see. But the fact is that they're playing better 5-on-5, and they haven't had the, you know, peripheral special teams and goaltending to supplement that and get them points in the standings. So it does feel different in that way from last season, even if the end result will probably be the same of another year missing the playoffs.
Last thing here on the net front, you mentioned Doug Armstrong. NHL insiders were a buzz heading into the Four Nations break about the potential for the Blues, having played so poorly in terms of results ahead of the break, moving guys, and Braden Schenn's name came up because obviously there are teams that could use character. Vegas Golden Knights, there's some affinity there. Obviously, Chief and Toronto, affinity there. Your thoughts on that? I mean, Armstrong loves Schenn. I think Steiner loves Schenn. There is the contract. There are years left. There is his age. There is a team that's in transition, this one. Your thoughts on what might happen there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good business for the Blues to at least listen on pretty much everyone in their organization. You can make the argument for not listening on guys like Thomas or Kyrou, just given their age, their contract, and their production. But they should be aware of what each guy is worth on the market at the very, very least. And to me, I think that the Blues value Braden Schenn a lot more than other teams may value him. This is the captain of your team. He's one of the guys that is willing to play a hard game and bring some skill. Like, there's not a lot of those guys on this roster. He does have a lot more, I guess, utility just outside of what he does on the ice for this group. He's a guy that also like cares deeply about the Blues organization. He's a guy that like enjoys going to, the Blues Hall of Fame stuff. Like, he understands the history of the captains that have previously been in St. Louis. Like, he calls his trade from Philadelphia, one of the best things that happened in his career, because he landed here. He's where he won a cup. It's where he became a captain. His kids are here. Like, it's a guy that values the organization a lot. And, he does have a no trade clause this year. The trade speculation isn't something that he's talking about. When I asked him, a few weeks before the break, or a few weeks ago before the break, he said he didn't want to talk about it. Then he kind of reiterated that yesterday, saying, it's all speculation. There's no need for him to comment on that. And that's absolutely fair. I'm curious how the fit would be for other teams when the Blues value him so much and will be probably asking a big price. And if you're another team out there, you look at just the hard facts, I guess. He's been basically a 45-point player, last year and this year. $6.5 million, which will look lighter in the coming years, but this year it's still pretty heavy. If you're a contender trying to fit in 6.5, not a lot of teams have that. I don't think the Blues will be wanting to retain for an extra couple of years. That's just not part of Doug Armstrong's MO. And the other side of that is he's talked about wanting to kind of clear the decks a little bit before Steen comes on, and not have dead cap when you hand it over to a new general manager. So I don't look at retaining on Schenn as a heavy possibility, given both the Blues succession plan and Armstrong's history. I mean, he's only retained on rentals pretty much, right? If I remember correctly, it's just basically been O'Reilly and Tarasenko. So there's a lot of different pieces, and I think if you're a contender wanting to make this trade, the price that the Blues put him at maybe too high, just given you have a 45 or a 45-point guy who's, is he what, 33? I don't even remember how old he is right now, with a few more years left. The hard facts of it don't point to him as a valuable trade target. So that's the outside view that I would see, and the inside view from the Blues is he's just your captain, he's your guy. So I wonder if there's a match, but it's smart of the Blues to at least understand the market that's out there for him.
Yeah, I think for this team, again, you're trying to set the standard and maintain that standard for the next group. He's a big part of that process. For me, it would have to be he would have to want to go someplace to win a cup. Otherwise, I don't think the Blues would even ask him. I think the level of affinity for him is much higher than it was for a guy like Torrey Krug. No offense to Torrey Krug, but this is a guy that won a cup here, and so I. It's one of those situations. I was surprised even that it got much play, just because, again, for all the things you mentioned, how much more value he has here, unless it was just Toronto Chiefs saying, "I got to have a guy like this, or else this team is never going to win anything," and that would be the only thing that would jump out at me. But I think we all know how the organization feels, and from Stillman on down, about Braden Schenn.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, listen, this has been great on the net front. I can't wait for the game Thursday. We'll see if there's four fights in the first 9 seconds. Is that even possible to have that many fights? Probably not going to have any of that. I know. I think Brady says it's just going to be hockey, and Matthew will say the same. It's just let's go out and play hockey. So can't wait for it. For Matthew DeFranks, I'm Jeff Gordon. This has been the NetFront Presence. A reminder that you can get all of our extra content, our podcast, our videos, all the things that we do on for the digital side on our website, the Post-Dispatch digital product at stltoday.com. Please do support local journalism. Until next time, for Matt, I'm Jeff. See ya.
Calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.